A longtime Arizona congressman is running for governor, and a political newcomer wants to be Yuma's next mayor. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Victor Calderon. Congressman Andy Biggs was in Yuma and San Luis this week. He's looking to unseat Governor Katie Hobbs.
I'll be the governor of the whole state, not just the governor of Maricopa County, which is why I spend so much time in Yuma and around the state.
And Carlos Adams says it's time for new blood as Yuma mayor.
There's a disconnect between the city and the community, where the community doesn't know what direction we're going, and the city is acting, chasing these big projects that don't benefit the community.
Those stories, plus we hear from the Crane School District's retiring superintendent, coming up on Arizona Edition.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Victor Calderon. Republican Congressman Andy Biggs is running for Arizona governor. On Tuesday, Congressman Biggs met with voters in San Luis and Yuma. KJZZ reports a recent study by Noble Predictive Insights found Biggs increased his lead over his Republican primary opponent, Congressman David Schweikert, by 30 points. I spoke with Congressman Biggs about why he's challenging the incumbent Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs.
I'll be the governor of the whole state, not just the governor of Maricopa County, which is why I spend so much time in Yuma and around the state, because I think sometimes there's the people in Maricopa County cocoon themselves and don't really understand what's going on. I think Yuma in particular is incredibly important because of the agriculture industry that's here. And I think it's not just important to our state, but it's important to the nation as well. Yeah.
What do you hear? What did you hear today from San Luis voters when you spoke to them? What did you hear? Were there concerns, their questions?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what you and I are talking about. What is it that is the message? And so we talk about normally the restoring the American dream to Arizona, which means we want to make sure that young people particularly can afford to get housing, get single family homes, so they can form families and perpetuate our society, our culture, our history, our traditions. And we talked about economic growth and how we need to, how we've seen it shrink. Arizona has shrunk. We're not growing. We're toward the bottom in economic growth. We're toward the bottom in affordability. These are two key issues that I think have to be addressed for not just Yuma County, but in the entire state.
So I want to ask you, because you were in San Luis, Arizona, I understand you are have served as co-chair of the Border Security Caucus.
Yes.
So what can you tell our listeners about what you know about what's being done here at the border in Yuma County at this time?
Yeah, so what's happening in Yuma is you actually have more control here than I've seen in probably my lifetime, but certainly in the last 6 years. I mean, so a lot of control here. Fewer gotaways, fewer known gotaways. Okay, let's just be honest about that. We still have a bit of a fentanyl problem, and we also want to make sure that the right people that are coming over, that have legal authority to come over, get over a little bit faster than they've been able to get over.
Did the people you speak with in San Luis, did they have anything to say about the border?
We didn't talk much about the border.
Earlier this month, Yuma Democrats called out Congressman Biggs and Schweikert on rising gas prices. Local elected officials and the chair of the Yuma County Democratic Party say the congressmen have voted against efforts to end the war in Iran. That, they said, has led to higher gas prices for Arizonans. I asked Biggs to respond.
Well, we got to quit being dependent on gas from California. That's my first thing. And that means that we need to make sure that we get pipelines and additional pipelines built from Texas coming over our way, because that's where we'll get the cheaper gas. Second thing is, this governor, by the way, a Democrat, failed to actually request a waiver on the exotic blends from California. Those blends cost us 50 to 60 cents per gallon at the pump. So the first two years she was in, she requested those. The last 2 years she has not. We're gonna make sure that we do that. With regard to policies that encourage or increase prices overall, I think that's insane. We've got a governor that basically said, she vetoed three times now bills that would say no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security, no tax on interest on automobile loans. She's vetoed those three times. That means that costs remain high and taxes remain high. I think what you're going to see is a movement, hopefully, where these costs will come down. And the other thing I would say is, the governor's mismanaged water. This governor's mismanaged water, and that costs us more money as a state. She's mismanaged land use, which means land is scarcer, which causes prices to go up and be higher. These are the things, and also she's mismanaged power. I mean, we need to facilitate power and make sure that we're growing power-wise, because we need more power. So, those are things that I'll be working on. I've been working on federal government, and I'll continue to work on this government.
So is there any legislation you've been working on that you would like to mention that would impact people here in Yuma and La Paz counties, which is our listener area?
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk about basically some legislation that impacts with regard to women and children, for instance. So C-SAFE, which I was asked to run by the deputy director of the FBI, actually would benefit because it fights human trafficking and child trafficking and sex trafficking on the internet. That passed out of the House, unanimously bipartisan support. I just did a bill that will impact our state overall, and that is on dealing with a court-appointed manager. Now, these are esoteric. I mean, they're not like nobody's sitting around, oh, gee, that's something we need. But they actually have benefit. That also passed out on the bipartisan. These are, right now, they're kind of stalled in the Senate, which so many other things are stalled in the Senate.
Is there anything else you would like to let our listeners know about your campaign? Any other message for people in Yuma, La Paz counties?
Well, I view La Paz and Yuma counties as very important to my campaign, but not just important to the campaign. They're important to the state overall. And they have access to me, and I will continue to visit. I'm not just a one and done. I drive all this way, and when I have a governor's plane, I'll be flying here, and that way I can get to more places. But I'll be a working governor. I won't be a shelter-in-place governor.
All right, Congressman Andy Big, thanks so much.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it.
The date for the Republican primary for Arizona governor is July 21st. In Yuma, Mayor Doug Nichols has overseen the city's growth for the past 12 years. Nichols is a familiar presence at city council meetings and ribbon cuttings. Now a newcomer, Carlos Adams, a Yuma native with no prior political experience, has stepped forward to challenge him. KAWC's civic engagement reporter, Carmen Marquez, attended Adams' campaign stop at Kennedy Park.
Economy there has
For KAWC News, I'm Carmen Marquez.
What does that mean for us?
A dozen residents gathered under the Ramada at Kennedy Park, despite the 95-degree heat, to hear Carlos Adams outline his vision for Yuma.
Certainly in a small town, every single vote counts. We're not electoral college for local votes, so a lot of the races are decided by single-digit numbers. So if you care about the community, you need to get out and vote.
Adams, a Yuma native and the son of local small business owners who sold Mexican crafts at the Southgate Mall in the 90s, framed his campaign around three pillars: transparency, opportunity, and community.
Transparency is a connection between City Hall and the community. We need to see what the plan is and what we're doing. Opportunity, Unemployment is the biggest talk in town, and the youth has no direction other than AWC and then go from there. And number three, community. And I think the community has to be involved prior to any decision actually taking place.
As he walked through a 100-day plan and what he calls a Yuma First agenda, residents listened closely, many hungry for a different approach at City Hall. Luis Diaz, another Yuma resident, said he plans to vote for Adams.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go out and vote. Carlos Adams means well for the community. He's a big impact to the youth right now, especially for the boxing community, since I know him from back in the day from boxing. A lot of the kids that are in there are 18. They're turning 18. So he sponsored a lot of kids within the boxing community. And I feel like all those kids right there, they're 18 now. They could vote. And they're definitely going to get his vote. And plus, the people that from my community, he went around, shook hands. And that's something that you don't see the other candidates doing.
Concerns at the meeting centered on healthcare access, jobs, and trust in local government. Ismirella Sanchez, a parent of a child with special needs, urged for better support in schools.
I do have a special needs kid, and I know that they are not getting enough one-by-one in their class. I would like more interaction, more time for the kids.
Residents also pushed for more local employment and opportunities that keep young people in Yuma. Mary G. emphasized supporting local businesses.
More jobs, definitely more jobs. Bring it and more, promoting more local businesses, bringing money back into the community instead of money going out of the community.
Andres Adams pointed to the challenge of retaining young people.
The youth, what they do is they're in Yuma because they live with their parents or something like that. Once they, you know, get at an age where they kind of want to move out, get their own life going, they usually go and work somewhere outside of Yuma. So the thing is, it's to build a better community, to have, like, you know, more families, you know, centered in Yuma. Just to have overall everything better in Yuma would be the tackling the unemployment. If there's a lot of opportunity here, there wouldn't be a huge reason to, you know, look everywhere else.
Calls for transparency and trust in elected officials ran through many comments. Kevin Bunnell urged for a closer partnership between City Hall and residents.
To improve the city, it's a partnership between the City Hall and the community. And so for so long, it's been a disconnect.
Maria, another voter, captured the sentiment in one line.
I want them to be truthful and stand behind what they are telling us, to actually listen to its community. That's as real as it can get, like actually listen to the people that put you in where you're at now.
For KAWC News, I'm Carmen Marquez.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Victor Calderon. Lori Doreen is retiring from her position as superintendent of the Crane Elementary School District. K KAWC Education Solutions reporter Cisco Stargazer spoke with Doreen about her 43 years with the district.
All right, we are with Superintendent Lori Doring of the Crane Elementary School District. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Cisco.
How are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you.
Awesome. So did you always know you wanted to do education?
Not for sure. I always knew I loved children, but didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had debated between being a nurse or going into something with the healthcare field or something with education. And I ended up going in education, and I haven't regretted it.
What convinced you?
Well, I saw twins being born. Wow. My dad wanted me to shadow a nurse, so I knew I didn't want to do that. I wanted something to be really impactful. And that's the one thing that's really unique about our profession, is that you know that you make an impact on so many lives.
Oh, that's nice. So how did you get your education career started? Was it just straight to teaching? Or
it's interesting. So I was interested in physical fitness and health. So I became a PE teacher. So I was a PE teacher for a couple years and wanted to get into the classroom and feel like I'd make more of an impact doing that. So I taught for years and then went into professional development, then to administration. And I've been a principal at 3 different schools and then came to the district office after that. So have held many roles, and all of them are invigorating and exciting.
Wow. Well, tell me a little bit about, so where did you teach and where were you principal?
I taught PE at Rancho Viejo back when it used to be 2 schools together. It used to be the largest school in the state as far as the number of students. We had over 1,000 students. And then I taught 6th grade when Valley Horizon, the school, opened in 1991. I went over there as a teacher. And I also taught a multi-age class over there. Then I went to professional development for a couple years. And then I became an assistant principal at Valley Horizon, then the principal. When Gary Knox opened in 2004, I was fortunate enough to be able to open that school, which is really exciting to be able to open a school, set the climate, etc. And then in 2009, I was moved to the middle school, Crane Middle School, and I love that age group of children. And then afterwards, I came here as the assistant superintendent and then superintendent for the past 9 years.
Wow.
43 years.
Wow.
It's a long time.
That's incredible. Actually, I'd love to hear a little bit about what was it like getting to open Gary Knox?
They did hire me early enough that I was able to get the staff situated. And it's really exciting because you really come together as a new family, trying to decide what is this culture, what do we believe in, etc. And everybody that went there were people that loved change. They were excited to try something new. But you have to think of everything as far as processes and procedures that were put into place at other schools that you just kind of inherit and tweak. You're building everything from scratch. So that was really exciting.
Wow. Did you see a lot of change over your time with like maybe the education landscape growing in Yuma?
I've seen a dramatic change. Back in the day, we were growing so fast we could hardly keep up. In fact, I was part of a committee that had to do some planning for year-round education. So at that time, the middle school was super large. So we did what we call a multi-track. So let me kind of explain that. There's 4 tracks. And so one track of students is off school. These 3 are in. So you have 75% of the population in. This group comes back. This group goes out on intercession. Uh-huh. This group comes back. This group goes out on intercession. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
But you do it year-round. So we had to do that so that you don't have too many students in the building and you've got room for them. So during that time, it was difficult. We had to do the multi-track. Then after that, Gary Knox was built. So it was able to take up some of the load. Mesquite was built, et cetera. So Centennial also opened up. So there was 2 middle schools instead of 1. And then no longer did we need the multi-track.
That must have been exciting to have like more schools available.
And now we're on the opposite end where the birth rate has declined dramatically. So less and less people are having children, and when they are, they're doing them at older ages or less children, the ESAs, et cetera. So we are seeing a decline in enrollment that's been really drastic. So I have seen both ends of the continuum.
So then I am curious, how was it becoming superintendent? Was it difficult?
Great question. Bob Klee, the former superintendent, was very helpful as far as transitioning. I did apply along with other people, and there was a forum that they had. So there was a few things that we had to do for that process. And afterwards, the board made the decision, and I was fortunate and blessed to be able to be the superintendent here. And at the time, it wasn't so much I wanted to be a superintendent. I wanted to be the superintendent of Crane. I grew up here in my career. I believe in this district. We all have a continuity of purpose and always do what's best for students in every decision we make. make. And I wanted that same belief and culture to continue.
How were those 9 years? Like, how did they go? Were there any big challenges maybe when you started that you had to tackle?
Certainly. Our district and our community has absolutely dealt with difficult situations, you know, looking through COVID and other things. One of the things that we have felt, of course, is the financial constraints that we have. Arizona is not funded appropriately, and we always rank between 48th to 50th as far as the amount of funding that we get. There's a lot more accountability systems, which are fine. However, they're not equitable. They're not the same for ESAs or for charters. They're different for public schools. So there are different constraints like that. Technology, I feel like our systems are so much better than they were before, and we have to be able to work smarter, not harder, because just how fast the pace of everything's going and the change of things. One of the things I do like that has happened over the past 9 years that I've seen is the data that we're able to have at the student level is at our fingertips so quickly, and we're really able to drill down and support kids in ways we weren't able to as easily before. We can also do it at the teacher level and see which teachers need additional support. Maybe their growth is really strong in math, but not as strong in ELA, so we know the supports we need to provide. We have to look at things a little differently than we did years ago. We talked earlier about the declining enrollment, so we have to do things such as marketing, showing people the great things that we do in our schools, because great things are happening here, but people don't know about it. So we've worked a lot to try to improve that.
What have you been communicating then? Is it just the... I'm sorry, I hope that's not repetitive.
No, I'll tell you a couple things. One is when you take a look at the state test from last year, we just got this year's test results in Friday. But from last year, I can tell you we had the top two performing schools in the entire county, Gowan Science Academy and HLS. When you look at our eighth grade math scores, which to me are very important because reading scores or English language arts, you and I both know if a person's an avid reader, if they read a lot, they are more likely to excel in reading, right?
Yeah.
The more time you have eyes in print and you're doing that, the better you'll get. Math is so concrete, sequential. And if you miss holes in that, like Swiss cheese, it's hard to be able to climb up that ladder. It's very, very important. We send more eighth grade students than anyone else prepared to go into the high school in math. Wow. More of them are proficient. And it's our last chance with these children, right? Not third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. It's eighth grade. That's the last time before we hand them off to high school and say they're yours. It's the last time we have to make an impact. So I'm really proud of that work.
That's great. So what are your hopes for the district going forward, or any well wishes for Dale as he starts?
My hopes, and I know this will happen, is that they will keep students at the center of every decision they make. Children come first. They will also continue to always improve, because this district is about a growth mindset and not being stagnant, and continuing the systems that have been in place for years, like I said, that outlast any one leader.
All right. Thank you so much, Lori. It has been a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope your retirement is wonderful. You have a great time.
Thank you so much. I look forward to it. Thank you so very much.
Right. You're welcome. More of this conversation will soon be available on our next Educating Yuma episode. Keep an eye out for it on KEWC.org or wherever you like to get your KEWC podcasts. For Arizona Edition, I'm Cisco Stargazer, and this reporting supported by a grant from the Arizona Local News Foundation.
In Yuma, South County, a University of Arizona partnership is testing simple human strategies to fight loneliness among seniors. KEWC's Carmen Marquez has more.
That's the sound of San Luis High School students playing lotería with residents from Las Brisas apartment complex in San Luis, Arizona. The game is part of Together Across Generations, a year-long program pairing local youth with elders to build connection and ease social isolation.
Convivimos con ellos y nosotros practicamos, les platicamos lo de nosotros y ellos también son muy alegres, muy comunicativos.
Lucia Espinosa says we gather with them, we tell them about us, and they tell us about them. They're full of joy. Lucia has been volunteering with the program for 6 months. For her, the visits are more than a way to pass time. They're an exchange of stories and laughter that brightens both sides.
and we bring intergenerational activities to reduce social isolation. So we have such as like board games, we have planting together, we have eating food together on a table, sharing a lot of like traditions from our culture. And I think it's been a great experience with in collaboration with the University of Arizona.
Campesinos Sin Fronteras coordinates the local activities, while the university helps evaluate whether regular intergenerational contact can reduce loneliness and improve well-being. On one hand, students teach basic skills and help elders connect with distant families. In return, elders share songs, recipes, and memories, cultural threads that tie generations together.
My grandma vive in Zacatecas, so I really can't see her because, I don't know, this program really me hace que la extrañe más y pues que le habla ahí de vez en cuando.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
My grandmother lives in Zacatecas, so I don't see her much. This program makes me miss her and call her more often. Organizers say small, steady interactions can reduce social isolation. For KAWC News, I'm Carmen Marquez.
KAWC's Arizona Edition is a production of KAWC, Colorado River Public Media. Questions or comments are welcome. Send them to azed@kawc.org. Our theme music was used with permission and composed by Stephen Hennig and performed by members of the Yuma Jazz Company. More information at yumajazz.com. Past shows and podcast information is available online. Just visit kawc.org for more information or search Arizona Edition wherever you get your podcasts. You can also take KAWC with you wherever you go. Just download the KAWC COFA app and the listening is in your hands. I'm Victor Calderon. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. Thanks for listening.